Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Modiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're getting into a conversation, what's going on in the world of insurance, and, you know, more specifically, the world of insurance technology that is a field or a world that is typically, referred to as being called InsurTech, and we're just going to be having that conversation with Vice Governor, who is co-founder and CEO of Everything.Insure. He is also holding a similar title when it comes to First Equity Group, and we're just going to be having a conversation about what's going on in the world of commercial insurance marketplaces and some of the development and the progress that's happening in that world. Vis, greetings to you today.
Greetings, Maniwa. Thanks very much for having me.
I introduced you with two titles, one to do with Everything.Insure, one to do with First Equity Group. What is the relationship between the two?
Okay, so with Everything.Insure, which is a digital platform and marketplace, I'm one of the co-founders with a bunch of very young, clever people who came to me with an idea. But I'm also the group CEO and one of the founders of the Everything.Insure insurance group. Now, Everything.Insure is a more traditional company, typical bricks and mortar offices around the country, et cetera, people and so on. And Everything.Insure is a technology company largely. So it's more tech and, data scientists and computer programmers and developers and designers and that sort of stuff. So the two companies are trying to do similar things, but their approach is quite different. First Equity Group, we do insurance. Everything we do is related to insurance and technology around insurance. We're a South African company, wholly owned by South Africans, founded by South Africans in the early 2000s. And we are now present in most of the SADC countries, presence throughout Africa, East Africa in particular, through our own offices or representative offices. And we are in the Indian Ocean Islands, Mauritius, Seychelles, and also recently licensed in India. So that's a bit of what our footprint. And we do reinsurance broking, insurance broking, product development, retail broking, risk management, etc. So that's the First Equity Group. And then Everything.Insure is a digital insurance marketplace started developing it about 5 years ago, when we said there's got to be a better way to do insurance than the way we're currently doing it, kind of thing, and that's where it is. So yeah, I hope that's a bit of background.
Just for someone who might be seeking a little bit more clarity, does that mean that there's any direct relationship between the two companies, or is it simply that these are two separate organizations that have you in common?
They certainly have me in common, but Everything.Insure is funded by and wholly owned by the First Equity Group.
Okay. Yeah, that's the piece I think that we were, just to make sure that anyone who's not understanding or anyone who's following, gets that, piece of clarity. So you're an insurance man, through and through. I think that's the long and short of, what I was listening to you saying. Whether we're talking First Equity Group or talking about Everything.Insure, it sounds like, insurance has been your, would you call it a calling in life?
So probably insurance and technology. And I've spent my entire career in the financial services industry, so insurance, largely short-term insurance, and in banking and bank assurance. So that's been the span of my career, with some management consulting thrown in. And I sort of gravitated towards the tech side of things. I mean, I used to be with a German insurer called Allianz. That was where I started as a trainee, management trainee. And there I was responsible for, I mean, I was part of the executive team eventually and responsible for technology processes, you know, and all of those things, kind of thing, innovation, et cetera, within the group. And it's, yeah, it started a kind of love affair with technology. And I've always sort of kept in touch and dabbled and the rest of it. And, you know, been involved in developing a couple of insurance platforms, implementing a couple of insurance platforms at different places like Nedbank, the Land Bank, Allianz, the group we're in right now, First Equity Group, et cetera. So yeah, tech and insurance, I suppose, is a good summation of how I spend my time and enjoy spending my time.
With all of that in mind, then, one of the things that I'm keen to get into, if we're going to maybe switch gears and take a deep dive into the world of everything.insure, is the fact that the concept of having an insurance marketplace has sort of become quite normalized in the South African context. People, you know, are used to shopping around for good deals manually, and there are a couple of platforms that can, you know, do comparative quotes and actually, you know, compare different, you know, insurance companies against each other, depending on what needs a person has. From a differentiation point of view, or, you know, claiming your own, you know, piece of that market, what has been, you know, I guess your nexus when it comes to, you know, standing out?
Sure. Thanks. Look, I mean, there have been some very good developments in the South African insurance industry, and we've been known over the years to be quite innovative in financial services. I mean, we really do have a very sophisticated financial services landscape, from all the way from regulation to technology in South Africa. So we do have some sophisticated solutions here. What we tried to set out to do is fundamentally different to most of what's there, because you know, you can either approach this from two ways. One is that an insurer or a product provider, somebody who sits behind a product, develops an online or digital solution for you to access their product. And there's been a couple of examples of that in South Africa, a few. Two come to mind that are fairly prominent, and happy to talk about them. But they are what we'd call a product solution or a product journey. You know, it's like I sell Nike shoes, and that's all I sell. So if you're looking for a pair of Nike shoes, I give you a really great experience to come to my Nike shop and buy Nike shoes. The other way of approaching it, so then you're going to get each insurer developing a solution themselves, or partnering with an insurtech company to develop a solution that either distributes an existing product or distributes a new innovative product, both of which is happening in South Africa. But it's a single product. You then have the other approach, which is a marketplace approach. And the marketplace approach is more like saying, I walk into Sandton City, or Canal Walk, or whichever mall you go to, and I can buy a lot of other things besides Nike shoes. So if I want Nike shoes, I can also compare it to Adidas or whatever the other, Puma, etc., in different shops or in a single shop. And if I also wanted to buy a suit, I've got a choice, you know, all the way from Tiger to Hugo Boss to Fabiani. So I've got a choice. So that's the fundamental difference between a product journey and a marketplace journey. Now, there are no true marketplaces in South Africa prior to everything.insure, or even since everything.insure. And that's where the fundamental difference was, you know, and that's what we set out to do, you know, almost 5 years ago. And it's complex when you're trying to do a marketplace, because you need to cater for the significant differences in everything from process to underwriting rules to pricing rules to requirements pre and post bind when you actually buy a policy for the various different products in one tech solution. So you can either, you know, do a product solution or you do a marketplace solution. And then in marketplaces, you get true marketplaces and pseudo marketplaces, I'd say. There are one or two. There's one very prominent one in South Africa that is that gives you the ability to compare a set of quotes from a limited number of insurers, and the quote, and you can compare quotes. Now, two things to be said about that. You know, clients want to be able to, if you give me a quote, I want to know that that price is certain. If I make a decision and I'm going product A from insurer XYZ, if I say that to you and you tell me the price is going to be, you know, 1,000 rands, then when I finally bind that and finish the process, I want it to be 1,000 rands. I don't want it to be 1,200 rands or 2,000 rands or something like that. Once you've gotten more information from me and managed to run all my data through your underwriting engines and your pricing engines and the rest of it. And that's what some of the other marketplaces or aggregators or comparative sites suffer from. And that was the problem we tried to solve. So giving you a comparative quote is one thing, but giving you a fast bindable quote is something quite different. So we wanted to be able to do that, take it all the way through the full journey from quote to bind, where you actually, when you hit the last click, you've got a policy in your inbox. That's what we wanted to, to achieve with you, and to give you a choice of a large spectrum of the insurance marketplace, not necessarily a product from a single insurer or a single insurance group. I hope that's answering what you were asking.
It certainly does, but I do think that we'll probably need to, scratch, even further under the surface for one or two, of the themes that you've just described, Viz. But I do like the fact that you've given us quite a comprehensive picture around what we typically think and see, around comparative quotes versus taking someone through the whole journey, and also just being able to make sure that whatever prices a person is seeing and agrees to is what they end up paying at the end of the day, and that there aren't any, surprise fees or any extras that end up happening to say when people, because I know some people like to do that where they say, well, the price that you're seeing is simply an indication. The final price is subject to various terms and conditions and all of that stuff. So with that in mind, then, because we are, from the world of finance, we are always interested in the business models. With what you've just described for us, right, what are the levers for, everything .insure to be able, to make its money, its revenue, right? Is it fees that are coming out from the side of the insurers because you're able to get them business? Is it the consumers that are, that are paying a platform like everything.insure for the convenience that is providing? What are the levers for you guys in terms of your own business model and making your money?
Yeah, I mean, we would love to be able to charge consumers to use the platform, because we think it gives you a tremendous advantage and benefit in terms of shopping around and time and convenience and not sitting in call centers and, not fulfilling in forms and not having to drive anywhere, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, doing everything digitally, including your claims. But, the fact of the matter, Madiwa, is that people don't want to pay for technology. They want to be able to use Amazon for free. They want to be able to use Takealot for free. They want to be able to use any one of these things, WhatsApp, Facebook, free. So that's the norm. And trying to charge people to use a technology platform, no matter how much value it provides, is really, it's difficult ground to break. So while we think we're adding value and should be charging something, we don't. So it's free to use as a consumer. It doesn't. We don't charge you anything. Then if we look at traditional insurance, and in traditional insurance, where are the revenue streams for the different players and so on and so forth? Most brokers, most companies will charge you what's called a broker fee or an admin fee. And that could be anything from a fixed amount, 5 rands or 10 rands, to a percentage of premium up to 10% for providing certain services that are regulated. So the regulator has given some guidelines on what can be charged for, what can't be charged for, and what are the maximums that can be charged in terms of commissions and fees. So if you were going to buy a product, if you're going to buy these Nike shoes for 1,000 rands, through how you normally buy it, if you bought it through our platform, you're not going to pay any more. The price that you're going to pay for the product is exactly the same. So the consumer isn't charged anymore. All the earnings that we make come out of the different roles that we play on behalf of insurers behind the platform. And all of them are, as I said, they're fully regulated by the FSCA and are within those guidelines in terms of what those fees are. And they differ for the different services as well as the different products, et cetera, different lines of business, you know, motor, non-motor, you know, life, et cetera. So, but they all are, as I said, regulated by the FSCA, and we are well within those regulations. And it's not the consumer that pays, it's other parties that pay, like insurers.
One of the things I'm curious about, Viz, from everything that you've just said then, is understanding, of course, what the business model is, understanding who you are making money from, and the fact that it's the different roles that you're playing, you know, along that value chain that, you know, you guys are able to charge on. Why hadn't, and I'm hearkening back to something you said at the beginning, why hadn't anyone else done, you know, something like this? Because, you know, for lack of a better word, it seems like it would have, you know, made obvious sense, you know, to be able to provide such a service.
You know, as Soraya mentioned earlier, you know, we had this insurance industry tech fest, cover magazine tech fest a few days ago, and I spoke there, and afterwards there was a cocktail party, and two people separately, when they were chatting to me, said, geez, you know, why didn't anyone else think of this before? So exactly the question you're asking, you know, and with most innovation, Madiwa, I think once someone's done it, we go, geez, why didn't someone do that before? Why didn't I think of that? And so that's the one dynamic, I suppose. The second dynamic is that, you know, there was some, I think it was Deloitte Research, you know, forgive me, it might not be Deloitte, it might have been one of the others, but who, you know, referenced the insurance industry as, based on studying different industries, technology laggards. So we are not known for a lot of innovation, and it's a very staid, old and staid industry, not known for, you know, for kind of breaking the mold and innovating. Compared to banking, I mean, banking, you know, I was involved in this at Nedbank. You know, it was probably 20 some odd years ago, around about the year 2000-ish, when we launched online banking, internet banking, we called it in those days then. And I mean, even at the time, you know, a lot of our colleagues at Nedbank are, this is a waste of money, this is a waste of time. Who's going to want to, you know, do banking at 3 o'clock in the morning or a Saturday afternoon, et cetera, et cetera. But if you look at what's happened with online banking, digital banking, from then until now, it was a bit of a slow start. But once it gathered momentum, I mean, it pretty much, you know, it is the only way to do banking. I wouldn't. Unlikely you would deal with a bank that didn't allow you to do stuff digitally online yourself, where you want, where you want, how you want, through my phone, through my tablet, through my laptop, and the rest of it. You either have completely digital banks or largely digital banks that you do 90% of what you do. That's what's going to happen to insurance. It just took a little longer, and probably for a few reasons. I mean, you know, I've been involved in the insurance industry for many, many, many years. Well, you know, 20 some odd years in the industry. And when I first got involved in the industry, there was an initiative then to have some kind of collaborative approach where all insurers worked together and allowed them to, brokers and insurers, to exchange data, et cetera, et cetera. It never worked. It never worked then. And from then, 25 to 30 years ago, to now, we still continue to solve that problem. I mean, probably 10 years or more ago, I was also involved in an industry initiative called Stride, where we tried to build a hub or a switch, whatever you want to call it, that defined standards that allowed all the different players in the insurance industry to interact with each other for whatever transactions you wanted to. So if you're a broker and, you know, extending that to a client, you wanted a quote, you knew how to interact with what insurer A's quoting engine, insurer B's quoting engine, insurer C's quoting engine, because the standards and the rules were defined by Stride. Now, a lot of effort, a lot of work, all the big insurers, the Suntems, the Hollards, the old mutuals, all the big banks, Ned Banks and Standard Banks and APSA, all were involved in this initiative. Millions were poured into it. Many, many, many years were invested in it. All the system providers in South Africa were part of that initiative, but it never worked for various reasons. And the various reasons these things never worked over time is my views. One, the technology wasn't necessarily ready and available to do this. 25 years ago, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have APIs, we didn't have technology that was as easy as it currently is now for different systems to talk to each other. So that probably why it fell away, you know, 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, you know, if you were a broker or a client, you didn't want to have to learn 20 different systems, the Suntem system, the Hollard system, the Allianz system, the Old Mutual system, etc., which was what you needed to do then. You didn't have a thing called a browser. So Stride, a few years later, the technology had improved significantly. This is the last initiative that didn't really work. It improved significantly, but the insurer's investment in legacy systems and the broker's investments in their systems, that was so fundamentally different that it was difficult to come up with a standard in the middle, because this thing Stride in the middle needed, it was almost like a translator. You know, you spoke German into it. It translated that to Afrikaans when it spoke to Suntem. It translated it into Zulu when it spoke to Hollard or whatever it might be. That thing in the middle that had a set of standards that was translated anyone's ability or language and data to the others, it was just too complex to get that to work and to maintain that when the environment was changing so much. Suntem were changing systems, Hollard were changing systems, Old Mutual were changing systems, all the brokers were changing systems, the banks were developing their systems. So that failed. So it's not for want of trying over the many, many, many years to build something like this that we haven't actually built it. And the fact that we now have it, I think, is a function of all those things I said: better technology, better insights, and honestly, it was a tough job, Madiba. When we set out to do it, I thought, we'll get this done in, you know, 6 months to a year, and maybe it'll, you know, whatever, cost us $500,000 to $1 million. It's been 5 years. It's been an absolute labor of love and many, many nights and weekends of doubt that we'll ever get this done, and a lot, significantly more investment than we thought when we started. So yeah, that's my views on that.
Are you able to give us a sense or a picture of what business performance looks like 5 years later? Anything to shed light on what the state of the business is? Once again, we're from the world of finance, so these are the things that people are typically interested in. They'll be like, this is making a great case, but I just wonder, like, what's the progress that they've made over that 5 years?
So we took close to 5 years to build it, Amadeu. So we didn't launch it until sort of last year. Second quarter last year, that was the only time we launched it. You know, we launched some small versions of it. You know, we launched a commercial product. We developed a very revolutionary, innovative commercial product together with Hollard, and we built the tech for that probably 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, we launched, but the actual digital marketplace and platform, you know, as I said earlier, we took a different approach to some of the other guys in the insurtech space who were building solutions for a single product and launching that as soon as that ready. So we had to build for every type of product, for various different product types that you could take any product, whether it was a cyber product or a pet product or a commercial product or a personal product, and digitize that and put that onto a digital marketplace shelf very easily and quickly. So it took us a long time to build the capability to digitize products and to put them onto a digital marketplace. So that's what took us the 4 years or so. So in that time, it was quite a black hole of investment and no revenue, you know. But so that's where the faith had to come in, that we had to keep doing this, because it took us a long time and no revenue whatsoever over that period. So we only launched it last year, and we fairly soft launched it. So we first launched it to be used almost in inverted commas internally. So the businesses that we either own or have associations with, we got them to start using it, and you know, getting out all the kinks and the teething issues and so on. And that went, you know, that went pretty well. And then we went gently kind of thing above the line. You know, we didn't invest significant amounts of money like some of our competitors in billboards and TV and all of that sort of stuff. It was very gentle above the line, some online and digital marketing and the rest of it, because we wanted to do this carefully, because this is kind of changing the way an industry works. And there's a lot you might not have you know, encountered in the lab or thought about. And when it really hits the wild world out there, you sometimes are taken by surprise. So we wanted to go gently on that. And it's been a good, slowish take up. You know, we've got thousands of clients that have come on board. All our internal businesses have used it, are using it successfully. And we're now sort of at that point, and that's why we're kind of starting to tell the world about it a lot more, where we are ready to kind of go big above the line and do everything digitally, you know, rather than just internally. So, yeah, thousands of clients, successful. We haven't yet recovered our investment, far from it. We're not yet profitable in terms of the cost of running the operation versus the revenue in there. That's the phase we're in right now. So it's months into the release of the marketplace. And if you look at some other marketplaces, I mean, if you look at Amazon or you look at Takealot, you look at, they take a long time to reach profit. I mean, you know, Amazon took 10, 12 years before they broke even, and probably took about 16 years before they paid their first dividend, I think. We think it's going to hopefully not be as long a journey, but we're seeing positives already, significant positive.
I'm hoping that you and I will be able to have a conversation, you know, maybe in a year or two, you know, where we can actually put some, where we can actually put some numbers behind some of the progress that you guys have been able to make, you know, out there in the market. But I've had, you know, a look, you know, at the website that you guys have as everything.insure. There's a lot that's going on here, hey? Motor vehicle, building, contents, home, personal items, all risk, watercraft, cyclists, golfers, security, medical evacuation, SME, business insurance, commercial business insurance, pet insurance, funeral cover. Like, there's so much you know, going on. And I think it exemplifies what you were trying to say, what you were describing at the beginning, you know, around, you know, making a comprehensive platform, you know, that goes across, you know, the different, product styles. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you, because you made a point earlier on when I asked about why this hadn't been done before, and I agree with your take around the innovation and particularly the technology piece, because sometimes an idea will be there, but you're just constrained with the technology of the day. And my question is, right now with the technology that we have, like, what's the next boundary that we're pushing? And I'm going to pose a situation to you, and you can tell me whether or not what I'm about to say has any feasibility. We keep hearing about AI. Everyone and their cat is talking about AI, and everyone wants to be associated with AI. Is there an opportunity, you know, for that type of technology in your sector? could I, you know, one of these days arrive at, you know, everything.insure? You know, because I do see that there's a tool that you guys have on the site. But you know, in future, could I simply arrive and, you know, be talking to, you know, something, you know, that says, hi, I want to insure my car, I want to insure the contents of my house and also have funeral cover. Please give me the best quotes. This is my budget. Please make it happen. And then it goes out and, you know, scours your various products and then just gives me, you know, one thing and then I'm done.
Mudiwa, absolutely, we believe. And in fact, the talk that I did a few days ago that I referenced earlier at the Tech Fest was exactly about that. And it was called Distribution Disrupted, Insurance in the Age of AI and ML. So it's right up the what you're asking at the moment. And the, you know, you can't underestimate the impact that AI and ML is going to, artificial intelligence and machine learning is going to have on the world in general. So that's the first point that has to be made and people need to internalize. It's going to be radical, the impact it has. And for those of us who started to sort of engage with the various different open source versions of it that are available, whether it's Gemini or Claude or ChatGPT, et cetera, you can't help but be amazed. And it's up there in my talk. I said this, and this was somebody else who I quoted. You know, it's up there with you know, the invention of the wheel and the invention of electricity and you know, the internet sort of 20 years ago or so. AI is going to be of that order of impact and bigger, is what we think. So you know, Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI. Estimated that we're going to need $7 trillion to get this job done. And now I'm sure a lot of your listeners, et cetera, would know that $7 trillion is more than the GDP of every single country in the world except two. So that's a very significant number. And no one company is trying to do that, and no one company is trying to invest that because they can't. It's an entire industry, and now governments have joined in as well. You know, so the entire tech industry is behind and trying to solve and develop and advance this AI technology and space. And as I said, most governments and collection of governments like the EU, etc., are also behind it, investing in it, developing regulation around it, and actually trying to hold it back a little bit until we really know how this is going to impact humanity and the world. So that's the first thing to be said. The second thing to be said is that insurance is definitely going to be affected. The predictions are that you know, by not that far, depending which research you look at, they all are predicting that you will be interacting with an AI agent in the near to medium term future. Now, we as a business, as everything.insure, you know, we've started to invest in AI and ML and bringing that into our systems and our platform. We're partnering with a specialist AI company, and we've employed some AI data science, machine learning specialists at looking at that. And we see it impacting everywhere. You know, there's some research by Bain that basically said the things that you can do quickly and easily are the things that are going to give you the least return. So bottom left quadrant, the things that are going to give you the most return are on the top right quadrant. So they're complex, they're going to take you longer, and they're going to be more expensive to do. And that's almost, you know, intuitively one would have arrived at that. And they said, don't be tempted to go directly to the top right corner. Do this in what they call three horizons. The first horizon is the easier stuff. Get that done. It's almost foundational. Then move to the medium, then move to the top. And we, you know, we're trying to get closer to the top right quicker. In fact, we started there, you know, before I found this band research. That's where we wanted to go and start it, and that's where we're working. But the ability for you to interact with an AI agent and talking to them, not typing, talking, where they, and this is not a Siri type conversation. This is not a FAQ type conversation where you ask it a very specific question and it gives you a very specific answer that's already in this database. This is using AI where it synthesizes answers for you. That's very much close and in the future. You can take all your information from within your company, your systems, your processes, your even your computer programs. You can take your rating charts. You can take everything that's your proprietary knowledge, and you could ingest that into an AI agent. I'm not using technically correct terms. I'm just trying to make it as accessible as possible. To ingest this into an AI model that your agent can be trained on and answer questions. So that's what we're busy with as well. And there, with the latest versions of AI, you know, GPT-4 and Gemini Live that was literally launched, I think, a week ago, they are touting it as being able to have a proper conversation with you with synthesized answers and at the normal conversational pace. So you can ask it anything. It can answer anything. It can act on what you're asking it to do using agents, etc. So that's very, very, very much on the horizon. And all the other things, you know, like doing evaluations of your car's been damaged in an accident, an AI can look at the pictures of the video of the damage and give you an accurate assessment of the damage, give you a bill of materials in terms of what you're going to need to repair that car from parts to paint, tell you what kind of labor you're going to require to repair and how long it's going to take, and it can also tell you which repairer is available and suited to that. So that entire process that takes, you know, weeks at the moment can be compressed to seconds almost. And a lot else in the insurance chain, things that take us days, hours, days and weeks, will be achieved in seconds using AI. There's definitely on the horizon and happening.
Yeah, no, it certainly has been an interesting time in the world of AI. And I guess you know, all the work that the likes of, you know, Google as well as OpenAI have been doing is actually quite impressive. As you were talking just now about making those assessments, I was thinking about GPT-4o, which is the latest platform that the guys at OpenAI have been able to bring out, where it can access your camera, you can talk to it, and, you know, it's quite easy to see the straight line between that technology and the type of, you know, real-time assessments, you know, that a person will be able, that a platform like that would be able to do, let's say, in the case of an accident, or at least making an initial assessment to say, oh, these are the contents of a house, or, you know, this is the car, that type of thing, and making a decision from that. So it is a very fascinating space to be in, and we definitely wait to see how things are going to be progressing. You know, who knows, as you know, as you said, and the example that you are giving now, maybe the next time that someone goes onto the everything.insure website, there'll be a tool that's already there, you know, this digital agent that you're talking about, you know, that can make that journey easier. Now, this, where I want to end and land today's conversation, is a little bit of a departure from what we've been talking about. It's about the process of starting and scaling a business. And one of the observations that I have made talking to a number of, you know, founders over the years is that people that have management consulting experience tend to have a little bit of a leg up, you know, in the world of entrepreneurship. And when I say a leg up, I don't mean there's inherently anything better, you know, about them, but rather that that there's just something that seems to be there in the water at management consulting firms. Because when a management consultant starts a company, that is not a small mom and pops operation that's being started. Those people are trying to conquer the world. And there's a toolkit that's already there in their head of how they're going to get there. So, you know, if there's anything that you could just share with us around how your management consulting experience has, you know, perhaps helped you, you know, whether it's first equity or, you know, on an everything.insure basis, especially the scaling, you know, and what types of pieces need to be put in place. You guys recently launched on the everything.insure point of view, but I'm pretty sure that there's already a proper roadmap in place.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a big question and a tough one. I do think that the toolkits that one and the experiences one has in a management consulting environment prepares you better. And I think that's because management consultants are generally engaged to innovate, to develop something new that doesn't exist, or to fix something that's broken and not working. You know, so I need to grow, I need to improve my efficiency, I need to X, Y, and Z, or I need to implement some new technology, or, you know, I want to start a you know, something or the other. So that innovating, building something that doesn't exist, or fixing something, is the mentality one needs if you are going to try and be an entrepreneur and start something from nothing. And especially if you want that to scale to being a significant legacy organization that grows beyond the founders, etc. So you need that skill set and you need that breadth of knowledge and experience, as opposed to management consultants often need to be almost all things to all men. You know, and you need to have a good handle on finance. You need to have a good handle on economics. You need to have a good handle on process. You need to have a good handle on technology, etc. So that breadth, I think, positions you well. So I'd concur. I'd concur with that. You know, but the other thing to be said is there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there who didn't come from that background, and it really was the passion and the commitment to an idea. You know, they thought of a better way of doing something and had an absolute, you know, passion about doing it and about implementing it. You know, whether you want to talk about Elon Musk and Tesla, you know, I mean, that company should never, ever have existed. You know, it would have died, should have died a long time ago if it weren't for him and investing his very last dollar. So passion, you need that, whether you've got a management consulting background or not. And scaling, you know, scaling is the holy grail everyone's looking for. You know, in many ways, new companies can scale more easily. Well, certainly a digital company is able to scale more easily than an historic company. So if you built Coca-Cola all those years ago, to scale, you had to build plants and distribution centers and outlets all over the world. And that's bricks, mortar, and people. If you're Amazon, you build your technology once and anyone in the world can get to it and use it. You don't have to go and take your technology to every single door or town or village, etc. The internet does that for you. So leveraging those technologies that are able to get your product to people and knowledge about your product to people is important. And that's what you need to do. You know, when we looked at scaling in India, we said, this is impossible for a company like us to take on a continent like India, 1.6 billion people. If we try to do that bricks and mortar and people, we don't have the money, we don't have the time, and I don't have the inclination. So it had to be digital. That would be my advice for most entrepreneurs right now. Embrace digital distribution, embrace digital advertising, embrace digital marketing. And that, you know, I've found in the last couple of years is quite a science and quite a dark art. You know, Google and Facebook and all of these Meta and all of these guys, you know, they want to maximize the revenue they make. So trying to spend your digital advertising dollars and paying for clicks and, you know, your search engine optimization so that you do feature higher up on the search pages, etc. You've got to get that right. So, and it's not easy. So I'd advise everyone who wants to do that to use an expert, some company, some who are experts in this. They're cheaper than you think, and you learn a lot quicker and pay less school fees. And start with small amounts of money. you know, 500 rand, 1,000 rand a week on these digital channels where you're buying clicks or so, and see how that scales. And that's what we did. You know, we started to spend, you know, a few hundred rands, 10,000 rands, 100,000 rands. Okay, what did we get in return? We got sales of 100,000 when we spent 100,000. Okay, that's good enough for us because our sales are recurring. But then if I'm not from 100,000 try to spend 500 or a million, does it scale in the same fashion? And what we found is that's very asymmetric. It does not scale in the same fashion. You need to do different things as you start to spend more because you move into what they call, you know, higher bidding pools and so on. So it really is a subject, Madiwa, that we could spend hours and hours on. But we've learned a lot over the last couple of years in that space. And you can't do it without digital distribution, sales, marketing, you know, embracing those technologies.
Yeah, most certainly. And, you know, it would be great to get you back, you know, just so that I think just the topic of scaling on its own, you know, warrants, you know, its own conversation, if not a series, you know, of conversations, because I do think that that is one of the big areas that a lot of businesses, you know, tend to struggle with, because in many cases, you're either fighting margins, you know, because your margins are so low that you need to be playing a volume game, or you're just playing a game in which the economics only makes sense when you reach, you know, a certain number of people, you know, that your returns, particularly from a returns point of view, you're now actually breaking even, and that having a small number of customers is just not going to help you to cover your cost base, and that you need to have those big numbers to make that happen. So I think the scaling conversation, you know, is a spot big on, one. Yeah. And it's great to hear, you know, some of the thinking that, you know, you and your team have sort of taken, you know, when it came to, you know, scaling, you know, your various platforms, going into different countries and, you know, what is the approach? What works in South Africa and isn't necessarily, you know, going to work, you know, a country like India, you know, like you said. Interestingly, I was in India last year, and, you know, when you're in a place like that, and the numbers that you're hearing, you can be a business that has a, you know, a customer base of 50,000 people, and, you know, you are considered a very small enterprise, you know, in such a very small enterprise in such an environment. So, you know, I guess you do have to have, you know, different approaches. So that's where we end off. It has been a really great discussion, just understanding a little bit about everything. Dot Insure, you know, and, you know, Viz just walking us through, you know, some of the innovations that they have been putting into place in the world of insurance. The big thing, you know, is the fact that they've differentiated themselves by being a marketplace for, you know, various insurance products. We read through quite a long list of some of the things that they're offering, and I actually don't think I read through an exhaustive list. It's just what I was able to find. And he was also just giving us some insight into the difference between what we see, you know, some of the, you know, quote comparison platforms versus what it takes to actually, you know, find yourself in multiple points along that particular value chain. Also giving us some insight into the fact that he's been asked this, you know, on more than one occasion, why no one else, you know, had been able to build something like this. And he says that, you know, it's a combination of factors, you know, one of which is simply to say that the technology just hadn't reached, you know, the place that it had. Also the types of agreements that you need to have in place to make something like that happen, because, you know, you're dealing with different players. They all have different systems. They all have different upgrade cycles. They all have different, you know, things that they're looking at. How do you integrate and actually make sure that you're putting everything together? And also, you know, just playing around, looking at the crystal ball around what the world of AI, you know, could look like, at least in the world of insurance, the world of digital agents, the world of assessing claims, and, you know, the world of speeding up, you know, what it takes to set up insurance accounts and also the claims process as well. And so that's been it. We were in conversation with the Vice Governor. He is co-founder and CEO over at Everything.insure as well as First Equity Group. Vice, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Madiwa. It was a pleasure.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.